Hi guys, welcome back to the Original Judo Podcast. I'm James Austin and we are talking today about the Commonwealth Games. Now we're a few weeks out from the Games. It's taken me a few weeks to kind of get my thoughts together. I always find doing these solo episodes more challenging to write, certainly write coherently or put my thoughts down coherently, and I know they don't always come out that way. My intention had been to flood you guys, I guess, with interviews from athletes who competed at the commies, but for various reasons that has proved more challenging than I thought. For one, TalkTalk cut off their internet, which made it very difficult to interview anyone. People going away, work, all the usual stuff. But hopefully in the next few weeks we'll be coming back with interviews, certainly from some of those guys, the men and women who competed, talk about their experiences. But the world of judo like moves on really quickly. We've had a world cadets, we've had a world juniors, and there's been some incredible stories coming out of them. And I wanted to revisit the Commonwealths before, you know, we got too far away from it. I wanted to start, well, it's such an unusual event, you know. It's this massive kind of global event bringing together nations from the former British Commonwealth, I guess. It's known as the Friendly Games. It's got an incredible like atmosphere. Everybody I think gets a little bit more time to celebrate the event than they maybe do at an Olympic Games, and the vibes through Birmingham, through the city, were so much fun for the whole thing. It's really a chance to showcase sport, to give athletes a massive stage where you get, I guess, some of the relative giants of sport. Maybe not judo, but relative giants of like wider sport. England, Canada, Australia, India. You know, there are others, but they end up facing off against, you know, some of the minnows. I'm thinking like those island nations, the likes of Vanuatu, St. Lucia, maybe Nauru. And then for judo, yeah, those major nations aren't present, but it is a huge chance again to showcase, to showcase the sport, for athletes to shine. It's a stage that for me is perhaps, it's only second to the Olympics, you know, in terms of scale. It's a multi-sport event. You know, there are single solo sport events that are bigger, certainly for judo, possibly Paris, possibly Tokyo, maybe a Worlds. But as a multi-sport event, the scale is unbelievable. You know, I think the profile, certainly in the UK, as it was happening, was massive. And again, in Birmingham, the response in Birmingham was such a positive. Everybody was excited about the event. Everybody was happy to be involved. Judo as a sport has only appeared, this was only the fourth time it's appeared in the Games officially. 8 years ago, for me, I was sat on the sidelines watching Glasgow, literally from Matt's side. I had initially been selected for the Scottish team, having trained there for 7 years, and been really proud to be selected for Scotland, and then suffered like pretty nasty knee injury a couple of weeks out as part of the final training camp. That meant, you know, we quickly found out it meant I wasn't going to be able to fight. So I had surgery, and then post-surgery, my knee was in my whole leg was in a brace. So I was on crutches, and I sat Matt's side watching like some friends or some really good friends, some teammates perform incredibly. You know, they performed on this massive stage to a massive, like, understanding, supportive judo crowd, Scottish crowd. Yeah, and I I was able to celebrate a little bit, but I was also trying to hold it together because I'd missed out on it. Now, this time, I was, I guess, taking part in the event in a more official capacity, supporting the event. I'd been approached through the podcast, asked, you know, if I would be interested in talking a little bit about judo, like to help out hosting the event, and that kind of pre-event show, talking to the crowd as they got in. I like to think of myself as a bit of a hype man. No, I don't. I was pretty bad. You got a load of support from the production team, your Progress Productions, from the production manager, the assistant producers, Tim, Rob, Andy, Nate, absolutely superb. My co-host Gemma was absolutely superb, kind of covering up for all the massive mistakes that I was making. But yeah, essentially the role was just chatting to people in the crowd. And everybody got involved. If we were doing something stupid, people got involved. It was a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed being able to speak to families or friends of people who are competing. I really enjoyed speaking to people I knew who were there supporting someone else. I loved the few opportunities we got to chat to the players on the mat. It was just an incredible experience, and it was a small insight into the planning and prep that goes into producing such a high profile event. And you know, I think I did want to say congratulations to the likes of Loretta, Sean Mitchell, you know, they're the massive teams that were working for them, who planned and ran what was essentially just this incredible spectacle, this incredible event. In terms of starting talking about the event itself, I wanted to kind of start talking about the conflicting styles that you get. You know, we've talked about how you get some major nations, you get some minnows, but I think in terms of judo, it's really evident that you see some different styles, perhaps a lot more so than the Olympics, where everyone is so refined. There's a lot of similarities, but here, you know, there was a Georgian influenced Cypriot team. The Mauritian team had strong French influences on their judo. We saw a lot of South Pacific nations, perhaps with a very traditional styles, and I'm guessing that that's maybe due to the proximity to Japan. There's countries who bring in, you know, their own wrestling styles, and it's evident in their judo. The British nations, yeah, you see that kind of scrappy grip fighting all the way through. It was amazing to see all these different styles and how they kind of conflict with each other. In terms of the medal table, England were dominant again. Now, England have won every single kind of Commonwealth Games. They finished top of the medal table here again with 13 medals from 14 athletes, 5 gold, 3 silver and 5 bronze. But I think we saw a little bit more erosion of that dominance. Back in Manchester, the English team took 8 gold medals. In Glasgow, they took 6 gold medals. And here, obviously, taking 5 gold medals. And I think it's a reflection that other nations are getting stronger. The Scottish team, who finished 2nd in Glasgow, are going to be disappointed. They took 13 medals in Glasgow 8 years ago. And here, finished with 4 or 5 medals, I think 4th or 5th again, similarly on the medal table. It was a young team. I think they'll be disappointed with that haul of medals, but it was a young team. And if we do see judos in the next Commonwealth Games, you'd expect to see some of those athletes going again, either looking for a second medal or right in the wrong, I guess, and winning medals there. Canada finished this time 2nd. They brought a small team, just 9 athletes, but they finished with 8 medals. And looking at the caliber of athletes they were bringing, I think you've got to expect that. For certainly for those Canadian athletes, and I guess for all the athletes who competed here but also competed in the Tokyo Olympics, I would hope that this provided a proper games experience. You know, Tokyo was an incredible event. It was run through a lot of pressure, a lot of challenges, no crowds. We had all the challenges from COVID. And I think what I'd hope is that those athletes who were able to compete there, the Gambian Faye Njai was another one. I know there was a Fijian who competed in the games. I hope that being able to come to Birmingham, you know, albeit at a less challenging event, but gave them a chance to compete on a big stage in front of a crowd, you know, that they maybe missed out on there. Australia, another one worth mentioning, certainly came, finished third in the medal table with their best ever medal haul. They took 10 medals, which is a massive improvement on 2014, where they only got four. I think Australia are hosting the next Commonwealth Games, and they've never selected judo as an event. Taking 10 medals, I think, is a really good sign. I know the Judo Commonwealth Games Federation have recently put in a bid pushing for its inclusion in the next event. I think there's lots of different factors that make it more likely that it's going to be in the next one. You know, Australia have recently set up a performance centre, centralising their judo. I think it is in the same city. I think it's in Victoria, and I'm almost certainly getting that wrong. Someone can definitely correct me. You know, and they've set up that performance centre in preparation for an Olympic Games in 8 years' time in 2032. So in 4 years' time, you'll be giving perhaps that some of that group of athletes their first exposure of a major games. Often you hear the argument that they always choose wrestling. Now, Australia is notoriously weak at wrestling. Again, they took two medals here, massively unsuccessfully, but I think wrestling always gets included because India has such a strong wrestling background and always pushed for its inclusion. Obviously, India got three medals at this Games, but also, most importantly, they took a bronze medal recently in the Cadet Worlds, their first world title in judo. And again, that might encourage them to be more open to judo's inclusion at the next Commonwealth Games, supporting its inclusion anyway. So I think, talked about it already, like England's dominance perhaps eroding. We're seeing a lot more nations get on the medal table. I think it was 13 or 14 different nations took medals, which is exciting. There were three new nations ended up taking medals on day two, which we'll come back to in a bit. Now, one of the stories we talked about in the preview was the kind of the elusive double medalist. And I wanted to start by correcting an error. Now, the Commonwealth Games previously has always come 12 years apart. Or certainly the inclusion of judo has always come 12 years apart. So Manchester 12 years after Auckland, Glasgow 12 years after Manchester. And I think in the last episode I mentioned that Scotland's Sarah Clark was the only double medalist, having won silver in Manchester 2002 and then gold 12 years later in Glasgow 2014. However, pointed out by friend of the show, thanks Ivo, Ivo De Santos, said that New Zealand's Tim Slyfield had also won medals at 2002 and 2014, taking bronzes. Correctly pointed out that he took bronzes at 81 kilos and 100 kilos. So apologies to Tim for not included you in there. It is an amazing achievement. Again, like indicating like the sheer longevity of your career to be able to perform like 12 years apart at, again, what is a major event. And yeah, I think with this Commonwealth Games coming only 8 years after the last one, we said in the preview show we're definitely going to expect to see a handful more athletes add a second medal to their resume. And we saw that. So on day one, Sushila Litmabam from India, she took a second silver. She won silver back in Glasgow, and she took silver again at 48 kilos. Day two, we had Jemima Yates-Brown. She took a second bronze medal, having won a great bronze medal back in Glasgow. She took a second bronze medal this time around. And then on day three, we had the likes of Pakistan's Shah Hussain Shah. He won a bronze medal at 90 kilos, having won silver in hundreds 8 years ago. New Zealand's Maura de Villiers, who I think has taken several years out of judo, you know, following Rio. She's taken several years out of judo and only been back in the sport competing the last 6 to 12 months. And she's done phenomenally well on the European circuit. And she picked up a second bronze medal, winning bronze 8 years ago, bronze again at 78 kilos. On day three as well, we saw a 78 kilo final between Natalie Powell and Emma Reid. Now, Natalie, representing Wales, competed in the final against Gemma Gibbons 8 years ago. Now, Gemma was number one. She won silver in London 2012. And what we saw was a bit of a change in the guard then. Natalie wins that fight. She establishes herself as British number one, and she goes on from there to not just be a British number one, but she becomes a force in world judo. And for the next 8 years, she's a force in world judo. And she went to Rio. She went to Tokyo. She's been barely outside the world top five during that time. Definitely not outside the world top 10. And in Birmingham, I wonder if we saw the same again. Perhaps a changing of the guard, a younger athlete, perhaps coming into her own. They've both had a phenomenal year on the IGF circuit. But again, I wonder if this is the boost of confidence for Emma to say that she can go on and step up. I wouldn't bet money on it, though. Again, Natalie is performing at an incredibly high level, and it'll be really great to see how those two go on from here in the running to Paris. We also saw two athletes take a second gold medal. And on day one, it was Ashley McKenzie who faced Sam Hall in the final. And this time, experience showed, and I think, I don't know if it's naivety, getting caught up in the emotion of the event, but McKenzie just had a little bit too much and catches Sam for 10 in what was quite an engaging contest. 2 days later, day three, plus 78s. Sarah Adlington is involved in an absolute ding-dong. She's a score down against the Indian Talika Mann. It's a really exciting fight, and as soon as she's a score down, she just amps up the pressure. Now, I'm doing this from memory. I swear she was a score down, but I think like three or four exchanges later, she gets the score back. I'm sure it was an Osoto, something to that effect. But for her medal, for Ashley's medal, the crowd response was incredible. The support it gave all the kind of home nation athletes was absolutely phenomenal, but they really got behind Ashley. And then again, Sarah finishing out the competition. I know the heavyweight men's came after, but Sarah finishing out the competition for the crowd, I think, was icing on the cake. Everybody loved seeing it. I wanted to talk as well about some of the other highlights for me. Now, the crowd really made the event. They supported absolutely everyone. You know, they made noise. Everybody knew that they were fighting in a major event. There was 2,000 to 3,000 people there for the morning session and the evening session. They got behind every home nation fighter. But for the medal fights, again, they just appreciated the judo. They appreciated the efforts. And it was such a positive vibe. It was so much fun to be in and around. On day one, we've obviously talked about Ashley's double gold. It was also loads of fun to see the Australian brothers, Nathan and Josh Katz, both win bronzes. I had an opportunity to speak to their mum and dad, to talk through the nerves in between the sessions, like just before they fought for their bronze medal fights. That was a lot of fun. And seeing those guys come away with bronzes was great as well. Yasmin Javadian, Coventry's Yasmin Javadian won bronze at 52 kilos, which was super exciting. And I think after that, it was like one of my biggest regrets of the games is that it looked for a minute like we'd be able to interview her on the mat, give her an opportunity to speak to the crowds. You know, she's one of Coventry's own. I suspect there would have been a lot of support for her there in the crowd. And ultimately, we weren't able to do it. And I think it would have been something that had been received really well. But yeah, so anyway, 57 kilos, Krista Deguchi, Canada's Krista Deguchi was a phenomenal, world-class, like, great to see her kind of back on form. Again, she was, she missed out on Tokyo Olympics, obviously, getting pipped by her compatriot. And I can't remember her name right off the top of my head. Again, someone can write in and tell me who it is. But this gave her perhaps a games experience. Whether it spurs her on to get another games, you don't know. But fighting in front of a crowd of 2,000 or 3,000 people would have been phenomenal for her. I think there was a great GB presence at 57 kilos as well. So England was represented by Achelia Toprak, Lili Nen. Achelia looked phenomenal, really pushed Deguchi in the final. Showed for me, I think, that she's able to compete, you know, certainly with world level players at that category. I love the bronze medal match between Malin and Lili. Again, 57s is so strong at the moment. You know, Nakoda, like a former world bronze medalist, is due back competing soon. And I think a lot of people have assumed that she would just walk back into that number one spot. But watching the standard here, I think there's a lot of competition. It's not going to be straightforward. You know, for me, Achelia might be the number one. But there's plenty of domestic competition. And that's going to be exciting to see who comes out on top in the run into Paris. Day two, the reception for the English winners, Daniel Powell, Lachlan Moorhead, 73s and 81s, was phenomenal. I think in many respects, those guys perhaps exceeded expectations. You know, the English men exceeded expectations. You'd expect medals, but they were beating world-class opponents in the finals. So like Lachlan, especially, you know, in beating the Canadian Draper Gauthier. I think perhaps on the middle days, you might have expected those gold medals to come from the English women. But the level of competition was so high in the women's categories. Obviously, Gemma Howe took a silver. Kelly Peterson-Pollard, Jemima Yates-Brown both took bronzes at 70 kilos. But again, Dan Powell, Lachlan Moorhead were absolutely phenomenal. And the crowd showed how much they enjoyed it. Day two was really a day of firsts as well. So Faye and Jay took the Gambia's first ever Commonwealth Games medal, taking silver at 73s. Amir Daniel Abdul-Majid took Malaysia's first ever Commonwealth Games judo medal. Again, 73 kilos. Bit of a funny one. His opponent had been disqualified in the previous fight. Would have been the semi-final. So he won it with a walkover. So a bit of an unusual one. And of course, we also got a silver medal for Jamaica, their first ever judo Commonwealth Games medal. It was the first medal for Jamaica of this game, so it probably got a little bit more profile. But that was at 70 kilos for Ebony Drysdale Daly. And it was so exciting for me to see Ebony do so well. She's obviously from Birmingham. I have trained with her brother. I've been dragged around by her brother. He's a friend for years and years and years. Nikolai, she's been on the show. It was an absolute privilege to interview like her family and her friends in between, you know, the early rounds and the final. I found that super exciting. You know, it's such good vibes. And obviously that semi-final against England's Kelly Peterson-Pollard, like those women are like effectively club mates. You know, they've grown up within a few miles of each other, gone to Hardy Spices, the same club, at various stages of their careers. They'll have fought each other thousands of times in training. And yeah, you know, Kelly's had a huge amount of success recently on the IGF circuit, whereas perhaps Ebony's struggled a little bit more. So it would have done her the world of confidence to come out on top. Finally, day two, I think for me, it finished with such an emotional roller coaster. Northern Ireland's Owen Fleming was involved in a heartbreaking bronze medal match with Nikolic of Australia. Now, obviously, Nikolic won't be so heartbroken. He took the bronze medal home. But the whole fight was so engaging. You know, there were two scores within the first minute. I think arguably they're both Owen scores. You know, he attacks, and I don't know why this first score is given to the Australian. Maybe he hooks in. That's how they justify it. But the second exchange is basically the same. And this time they give it back to Fleming, and you can feel the crowd really getting into the match, really feeling like there's been a bit of vindication at that stage. But then Owen has this perhaps really visible injury, and nobody's really sure what it is. And since then, and I'm hoping to get Owen on the podcast in the next couple of weeks. He's had, I think, pretty extensive surgery on his stomach or his groin. But during the fight, you can see that he's less able to do judo or even walk. You know, the crowd gets so involved, and you can see it lift him, but he's physically unable to keep going, and ultimately he gets caught. Again, I think with a dropped CI and loses the fight. It's so emotional because 8 years ago, Owen took a fifth place in Glasgow. And I guess that during the contest, he maybe felt that his chance to take a medal was slipping away. You know, I guess that he felt that it wasn't going his way. And you can see him battling the pain, and you can see him battling the despair as he's fighting. Or certainly, that's what I saw. And the crowd was so involved. And again, it was, I think when he got scored on, you could feel hearts break. And then they, like, yeah, I received the winner, Nikolic, as well, gave him a massive round of applause. And as Owen got back to the millie, he received a massive round of applause as well. But you do come away massively feeling. But again, I'm hoping he'll talk through that story whenever we manage to get him on. Finally, we've got day three. Now, it's the big guys, the big men and women. I loved day three. Under 100s, the Canadians were so impressive. Like, the world's ahead of everybody else for me. And I love their bit of camaraderie in the final, big chest bump. But I was also impressed by the two English fighters. I thought they did really well. Both ended up beating the Australian, Japanese Takagi. Both a little bit more tactically astute. And I love seeing that. At 90s, again, that home nation support was evident. The crowd erupted when Jamal beat the Mauritian in the final. And that was so great to see. That was absolute chills down the spine. We've talked about under 78s, or certainly the under 78 finals. We've talked about de Villiers, the New Zealand girl, again looking impressive, taking a bronze medal. And at 78, Sarah Adlington, you know, was so impressive, so calm and assured in winning, yeah, her second title. And she's someone I've known for absolute years. The crowd responded to her so well. It was, again, great to be given the chance to go up and interview her brother, interview some of her club mates, some of my friends when I was training in Scotland, the guys from the Edinburgh Club, see how excited they were for her, see how nervous they were for her. But she was absolutely amazing. Finally, we had the over 100s, and they did not disappoint. They were amazing. Deschenes, the big heavyweight Canadian, was leagues ahead, and it looked like he was enjoying himself. I loved his celebration, the gator. Again, he talked a little bit about it in an interview afterwards, but it really looked like he was able to enjoy his judo. I loved seeing the big Mauritian, Sebastian Perrine, as well. He was 175 kilos. He looked impossible to move, but he also pulled out some huge judo. Like, I think he caught the Kenyan with a huge ashiwaza in the quarterfinal earlier in the day. And then I want to say he did a drop CI as well in the bronze medal match for Wazari, and that's the score that won him the bronze. Like, super exciting judo. Yeah, there were loads of great bits. I think they're the things that have stood out for me, like, from the whole production, the whole show. You know, it was spot on. I would like, though, if you had any other highlights, if you were there, if you were following it on TV, on the BBC Red Button, or from wherever you are, yeah, get in touch. Let me know what you enjoyed. It's at Original Judo Pod on Insta and Twitter. And obviously, all that normal stuff, you know, we've reached the end of the show. If you enjoyed it, you know, if you enjoyed anything else before now, give us a retweet, give us a share, and I will catch you soon.